I of course struggle, try to get anything done sometimes because I'm a big procrastinator. Usually happens when I try to be perfect at everything. Because that idea kind of eats me up, and then all of a sudden I cannot even do anything.
If you want to get stuff done, then you have come to the right place. This is the Get Stuff Done podcast, brought to you in association with RDI Worldwide, a weekly interview series with prominent and diverse people from around the world who will share their own unique insights on what it takes to get stuff done and their personal strategies for doing so. My name is Gordon Dudley, the creator of the Get Stuff Done project and host of this podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. We hope you enjoy this episode and would love to hear your feedback anytime. Let's get stuff done. Hello and welcome to the Get Stuff Done podcast. I'm back today with another fantastic guest whose name is Britti Ko. She is actually an English and Korean teacher interpreter, and she has definitely reached the status of being able to call herself an influencer with well over 70,000 followers on her social media. She was born and raised in Korea, but graduated from the University of Washington in business, and has also worked in the US at Merrill Lynch, as well as within marketing, and also briefly in fashion as well. So now she is an independent entrepreneur. She has created her own brand, and she also MCs and is appearing on a lot of different events, both in the International Business Network here in Korea and also Korean as well. And I understand she also has a passion for bartending. So she's clearly somebody who likes to get stuff done at a very high capacity. And that's why I wanted to get her on the podcast today. Britti, thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me. That was a long, nice, welcoming speech. Thank you so much for that.
Well, you know,
I do so many things. I know it's
sure. Yeah. And you know, it was all facts, right? I didn't make any of it up. So if you have already achieved a lot, then there's lots to say, but I'm sure you're still very much in the mode of writing that story. But tell me a little bit about how you came to be, an independent business owner, you know, creating your own brand. How did that come about?
I originally, so I'm like obsessed with the language, like, English is like my thing. I have a huge interest in the culture and everything. So once I start to realize that, I went abroad to study and, get to know more about the language and the culture for college. I was going for accounting, hoping to be an accountant and make tons of money, but then I realized pretty soon that was not my thing. So I had to continue with the business school program, but then, you know, decided that I actually want so many different things in my life. So I came back to Korea and then I started doing a bunch of different things, like modeling, teaching, marketing, finance stuff. And then, the more I do different things, I was hoping that I could choose one or the other so I can focus on a couple of things. But then, you know, obviously, I only found out that I'm a man of many talents and interests. I wanted to keep all of them. So I kind of have to choose a lifestyle where I should be able to manage all that. And, you know, so here I am.
I got it. I think that's actually fun.
I can never settle for one thing.
I think that's great. You've been able to, you had almost a bit of a challenging situation of how to accommodate all of your interests, and you found a way to pursue them all at the same time. So your brand is called Fitglish. Tell me about that name and the origin of that.
I used to be a workout fanatic, so I wanted to have something with the fitness that represent who I am. And also English is, like I said before, it's a huge part of my identity. So first idea was to combine fitness and English. So when people see me, that's my personal branding. That's what I'm made up of. And then the second part was also, being an English teacher and translator, I wanted to tell people how I can, help people get their English fit for different purposes. So it has two meanings.
Fit for purpose and fitness. I like that.
Yes. I'm glad.
And does your work, I mean, are you traveling for your work? Is that part of what you have to do on your assignments?
Traveling is my greatest hobby, and fortunately, I travel a lot for work, for translation work. I travel quite a lot, and also modeling and influencer job once in a while. So yeah, traveling is definitely a big part of it.
And I'm curious whether the influencer social media is fueling your translation interpretation biz, work, or the other way around, or are they separate? Mm-hmm. How do you manage those two aspects?
As you might know, I don't do any advertising for my teaching or translation work. Everything I get is through my friends, connections, and major on Instagram as well. Some people just DM me for this teaching opportunities, modeling opportunities, or translation gig, and that's how I get my job. And also vice versa too. Like, I'm out there at this event as a translator, and they find out I'm also an influencer, so they would like give me other opportunities in that area as well. So it's like, it's mutually helping each other.
Okay, so then what does a typical day look like for Britti? Is there such a thing? I'm curious.
That's an excellent question. And then I get the question a lot because, people see me doing different things, and I'm like, oh, what time do you start? What time do you finish? Right. But as you can suspect, there's no such a thing. There's never a routine for me. So when I have a work to do, I go do the work, and then I have a couple hours and then I take a rest, and then, another hour I might be doing something else. So it's really random, and sometimes I have a regular schedule for teaching position, for example, but then translation work and then other stuff get added on at the last minute at times. And so, yeah, that's the most difficult question to answer. What time do you go to work? What time do you finish? What's your daily routine like? Because I don't have any.
So with such a jam...
Stressful.
Right. This is an interesting topic that comes up on the podcast, which is that if you're doing something that you enjoy, even if it is a lot of quantity, that you can still bear that, right? Because you just love doing it. But if it's... Everybody has a limit. So, of course, quantity can be a factor where suddenly it just becomes too much. But also, if it's not something you like, then you're going to run out of the energy to do that thing a lot quicker, right? I mean, for me, there's certain things that when I'm, with RDI Worldwide, which I don't enjoy doing, I'm not good at. I put off to the last minute, or I try and delay, and then it's like the worst of all kind of scenarios. And then there's other things, of course, which might not even be that meaningful or profitable activities, but I love them and I always want to do them. So it's always that kind of conflict of what to do first and what to focus on. It seems like just generally you're getting a lot done. What's your secret? How do you maintain such high energy levels and be able to do all these different projects?
Okay, I might sound silly saying this, but I'm Korean, being Korean, so I truly believe in MBTI, and my MBTI is ESFP, so I basically get energy from being around people. So my job requires being around people a lot, and then for some people there might be energy draining activities, but for me, that's how I recharge myself. So when I get excellent job on translation work, I get that energy and use that to bartend better, teach English better or something like that. So I definitely get energy from different jobs I do, and then use them for each other, if that makes sense. And when it comes to getting things done, I think, people like me who have many interests, I need to definitely set some standards, what I want to do and what I need to do. So I always try to distinguish those two different things. So even though I really want to do something more fun at the moment, I try to focus on what needs to be done quicker, what's pressing, what's gonna really benefit me in the long run. So that's what I try to go for. And I also learned, you know, along the way to say no to things that I wouldn't be happy about, like 5 years now, 10 years from now. So yeah, those are a couple of things I try to do.
And how long have you been doing this now? Like, and I'm curious, the point of being able to say no, presumably that's from having some experiences where you said yes to something and then regretted it. So, So what was there a trigger or a kind of turning point that made you decide from now on, I'm not going to do these kind of things?
Right. So as you can suspect, I actually learned it the hard way because I'm a yes girl, because I like going to fun events, hang out with friends, people like me and stuff, you know, like doing the new challenges. But then after a while, I had to realize how that's suffering, giving me suffers, because I have too much to do. I have all of a sudden too much on my plate. And then I find myself not being able to get done with anything at all. And that was really frustrating. So a couple of experiences like that. And also when I promise and I wasn't able to deliver, I lose trust from people. So there was another huge experience that made me realize I need to rather just say no to things I'm not going to be able to keep my words for. And my life has been much, much better. Yeah, because I promise and I can always deliver.
And has there been a point where you have maybe thought about expanding, and I mean perhaps getting, I don't know, a social media manager or maybe getting a marketing manager, mm-hmm. or even an agent, I guess. I mean, maybe you already have an agent for your modeling side of things, but have at the moment, it's, you know, you are the face of the brand, of your own brand, and you know, doing everything. Has that kind of crossed your mind? Have you considered that so far?
Absolutely. So that's why, because I'm a teacher, I used to go through an agency to get teaching jobs, but now I do my own thing. I go directly to people and then, you know, like sign a deal with them and influence job as well. Because I've been an influencer for such a long time, I realize I know how to do things. I know what to, you know, like expect and all that. So I actually started getting into that industry as well as a marketing manager, you know, like managing influencers to
to be connected for other people,
to
you mean?
The yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
That's my new project.
Okay. So it's sharing your insights that you've learned along the way to help others grow their brands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, this podcast, well, Get Stuff Done, does have its own Instagram. Mm-hmm. It hasn't really taken off. It hasn't really got any traction. I'll hold my hands up and say that. So, so when I was thinking about, you know, what channels I want to focus on, and mm-hmm. I thought that maybe Instagram could be a good, you know, a funnel to attract more attention to this. I went so far as to reach out to I went so far as to reach out to somebody who is a big like international influencer who also offers kind of coaching for that, and so I had a chat with mm-hmm. her, and she was all about monetizing the like the social media, mm-hmm. but I realized that was not what I was doing it for. And so I decided not to kind of pursue it. So I'm always thinking about how
you don't need money.
you only get money.
Learn to say no.
You only get the money if you get ridiculously high views. And I'm not trying to invest that much time into that in order to achieve that. So yeah, I think with the podcast, I mean, at least the foundation of Get Stuff Done is this podcast. And I think podcasts are more of a slow building kind of thing, right? You slowly accumulate over time. And we've only just gone, I think, we've just passed 20 episodes, right? So in some sense, we're still quite early, even though we've been doing it now for 4 or 5 months.
So it's a work in progress. Okay. So I was wondering about your how you actually go about, like, you know, putting your content out there. Are you, you know, are you very strategic about it? Are you kind of thinking and planning around how you do it, and you have a kind of a method that works for you, or is it just a you know, a constant flow of what you're doing?
Right. So firstly, I started as a like fitness person, you know, like who's not working in fitness, but then who enjoys workout, and then was competing in this different contest and all that, especially the one with Men's Health magazine years ago. After that is done, I continue to work out, bringing out this healthy energy and vibe, you know, trying to take care of myself. To be completely honest with you, I don't think that's my brand image anymore. If there was a strategy to come across as a, you know, like healthy individual who works out, takes care of herself, eat healthy and all that. But now it's more about somebody who's being herself. As you can tell on my social media, like when you see my page, it's kind of hard to tell what I really do, because I post a picture of me working out one day, another at this fashion event, and another time like bartending, and then there's like, you know, traveling, just all over the place. So at first I was worried about how that's gonna portray the image of who I am, you know, being the person who's like, you know, kind of like losing, doesn't have a clear identity. But now I don't see that as a negative thing. I rather decided that could be better strategy to just be who you are, like do what you do and enjoy what you do, and then try to post that on Instagram of daily lives of how exciting my life is, and people can associate with me on different things. You know, people who work out can see my photo of working out and have questions and communicate with me, interact with me on that topic, and then post the picture of me drinking nice whiskey, and then some other group of people can respond with a, you know, mutual interest, things like that. So I think it's more fun that way. It's not about really finding the niche, obviously, for me, but it's more like being who you are, just trying different things, doing everything I want to do. Life is short. That kind of message overall, I think, is the great brand image that I want to continue with. And that is my strategy, if anything at all.
I think in...
If that makes sense.
It does. Enjoy what you do. I think, what is it? Is it a WeWork's slogan? I'm not sure, but do what you love. Right. I mean, that is something that I truly believe. I think life is too short to do what you don't enjoy. You know, I remember one of the company jobs that I had in the past, our workflow would be like a feast and a famine. We would be just like super crazy busy, working overtime all the time. And then we would go to basically no work, like literally nothing to do. Mm. We were just like, you know, caught there in the office. And I don't mind being full on intense with work all the time. It was so frustrating to not have that kind of balance. So, you know, I was definitely not loving that. Mm. So I decided to get out of there, and you know, here I am. 8 years later,
good for you.
Running my business, but
that's amazing.
That also, you know, running your own business does have its own challenges. What's the hardest thing for you to support yourself?
I would say, like, you know, realistically, feeding myself. I gotta worry about feeding myself. Otherwise, it's not a company that exists for me. So no matter what I do, day in and out, I would get paid at the end of every month. It's not the type of life I live in. So I always have to think about how to manage myself, manage my brand image and my health as well, so I can continue doing what I do. And I think that's probably the biggest struggle as an entrepreneur or freelancer of the matter. Yeah. So take care of yourself. It's the biggest struggle.
So now I'm curious.
Because you're alone.
Right. It's all on you. It's all on you.
Yes.
I'm curious about the two opposite ends of the spectrum. I'm wondering, what is the most lucrative single piece of work you've ever done? And have you also done pro bono stuff because it's something that you like or enjoy or interested in?
That's a great question. Wow. Okay. You're not going to use me on another pro bono work, are you? I'm kidding. You can edit that. Well, okay. So yeah. I think that translation work is the most lucrative job for the most part, because it's, you know, like it has lots of importance. It's a big deal to be able to accurately translate the words that are being exchanged, and you got to be presentable. It's a huge time commitment, and you don't know how long you're going to be, you know, like need to be there for. So it's usually like all day kind of commitment. So that's a lot of money.
So just to be clear, just for everyone, you're mostly specializing in simultaneous interpretation, right?
Both simultaneous, sequential, both.
Because I mean, you know, getting a document and translating it, you know, within a certain time frame is a whole different ball game to being there, and you know, it's definitely requires a lot of skill to be able to do that well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, like, you know, like paper translation work is not as much that you get paid for, but translation, like, you know,
makes sense.
Modeling sometimes gets a pretty good pay too. I would say I do pro bono work once in a while to promote myself, because I don't really do other advertising activities. But when I get an opportunity to present myself and then share what I do, and then share some insights I have about different things, that's usually pro bono work that I do. What else do I do? Well, I used to do like pro bono modeling back in the day, but I don't do that anymore. Yeah.
Okay.
And influencer work too.
Okay. So sometimes, yeah. Yeah, I am. I mean, to be honest, the saying no when you're running your business is an incredibly hard thing to do.
Yes.
Especially when it's a referral, because you're getting somebody who has had some good words from someone in your direct personal network, and there's a bit more of an expectation that you're going to be able to do what they want. At least in recruitment, the main work of RDI, I found that when we are very open about what is our speciality and what's not our speciality, and obviously that's the case where we will say no, is that it usually, I mean, of course, it doesn't lead to any result immediately, but it does usually still bring back a result later on. So it's kind of like an investment. It's not an easy one to do, but it does usually come around again, because they have received a clearer idea of what your speciality is. So
yeah, true.
Okay. And when you are traveling, and then you obviously are coming into contact with many different cultures, what do you find some of the challenges of working internationally?
Well, I honestly don't really see that many challenges working with international people, because I spent, you know, like 7 years back in Seattle, like meeting a bunch of different people from all over the country. So I was able to be pretty well rounded and that in that matter. Well, one thing that I noticed though is probably this Korean mindset, because I'm Korean anyway. I'd like to get things done, like, you know, like I don't have the patience to wait for people to get things done. So I'm pretty impatient when it comes to working in a group setting. I need to just see things happening right away. But I realize non-Koreans, they are not cut out to be that way. They like to take time, they like to enjoy family vacation, you know, like they're kind of like, oh, see ya, I'll be back in 7 days because I want to. And I'm like, that is a little frustrating when I try to get this ball rolling, because Korean culture has it that we really need to get things done nonetheless, kind of stuff. So it's a little frustrating. And no offense.
Do you have... Not at all. Like, because I'm always thinking about the Korean phrase "마음에 급해요." Like you know that
bali.
Kind of like right? Bali bali. And do you have any idea of the origin of that? Where that has emerge to be such a prominent part of Korean culture?
I don't, but my guess is that we come from like a poor, you know, a history of how we used to be colonized by Japan, and it's such a, you know, huge population in such a small land. So people have to kind of adopt that mindset to get things done quickly. Otherwise, somebody else is going to get it done, take over. It's my guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, there are other poor countries, but the specific elements of the Korean history, like you say, with that potential for not being able to get what you want because of scarcity, yeah, that might be it. I don't know, because when you see when you go to a history museum, or you see the old like the ancient art of Korean, right, back in a few centuries ago, of course it all looks so serene, right? You know, the royal courts, and it always looks so very orderly. And yet that was still when obviously Korea was poor in those days. So yeah, it's interesting, because maybe technology has accelerated the ability to do things fast, and so then it's made it even more of a thing. And of course Korea is a place that has adopted, or is a very early adopter of technology. So
yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, that's one of the biggest elements. And then also the other thing, like I mentioned, how it's a competitive society, like so many people trying to compete over limited resources. So we have to act quick. It's kind of in our nature now. Yeah.
I'm curious whether you, in your work, and whether that's the social media or a translation, whether you are using technology much yourself. Like, I'm wondering, I saw a reply on one of my LinkedIn posts this week, and it was a really long paragraph with basically no punctuation. It was clearly written by ChatGPT.
Oh, wow.
I was like, this is just like blatantly obvious. So,
That's so rude.
I'm wondering, like, well, I mean, it's careless. It's definitely careless. And it's also, in that particular case, because they were trying to make a point, it's also kind of lazy, because it's not their own thoughts. It's not their own content that they've produced. Do you use AI in any way? Does it help you? Is it something that you can see potential in?
I used to be really skeptical of it, because it's a technology that could replace what I do. So at first, I try not to even think about the idea of ever having to learn to use it. But then I had to come to senses and then learn to compromise a little bit, because, you know, after a while, anyway, I'm going to need to work with it. Now I use that in translation work. When I used to just do all the translation work all by myself, now I try to do it a couple times with AI, and then I can start off of it instead of just, you know, starting from scratch. And the other one I started using is in my class, because I teach some celebrities too. I cannot tell you who they are. There are so many of them. But then sometimes they need to come up with this like cover song, the pop songs, to kind of go viral with themselves. And then I don't know that many songs, to be honest, like, you know, like this K-pop songs, pop songs, what have you, like these young kids listen to these days. So in the case, I utilize ChatGPT, ask them questions to make a list of this pop song that my student might be able to use. And then my student is this and that, how old they are, they're in this idol group called this and that. And then, you know, they, so that I can use that knowledge, and then, you know, can save lots of time by doing that. So I do use it.
Yeah. So funnily enough, that's actually my primary use of ChatGPT as well. I think it's one of the most useful things, because if you Google search for a list of something, only if someone has put together that list before Will you see it? And of course, that list is going to be according to whatever preferences they gave. Whereas with ChatGPT, you customize the exact list that you want. So I found that very, very useful. For example, in resumes, right? When you're writing your resume, you usually start the bullet point using some kind of positive action verb, right? Developed, created, initiated, et cetera, et cetera. So, ChatGPT can just give you, I don't know how many, 200 different options. And
they never get tired.
Definitions. Exactly. And and so that's definitely something that I've used it to great effect. And interestingly, on the topic of translation, because in the past, Korean has really not been well served with any translation tool, right? I think other more similar languages, the technology is there, but I'm finding that ChatGPT, at least for Korean to English, so when it's not highly context-based and nuanced of the situation like Korean is, so into English, then it's pretty decent. But the other way, still not good enough. Into Korean,
I would say decent is the word we're looking for. So if you're going for decent, just quick, easy translation work, then you use AI. But then beyond that level is not something AI can totally take over. So that's why people can always have the control. I know Samsung Galaxy comes up with this great translation tool. I tested a couple of times. Kudos for that. But obviously, they're never going to understand like a deeply rooted Korean cultural folk songs, for example, to translate that, something like that. So I realize I still have the place to be.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Not to mention live. It was a long time ago when the news first came out that that Google is close to having a live simultaneous translation technology. It still hasn't got there, right? So it still remains to be seen. But what I am surprised about is the English Korean media. So the Korean mainstream newspapers, media outlets, some of them have English versions. They seem to still be using basic translation tools for their articles.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
Very often.
I hate it.
Like, to see some of the, literal translations, which is just becomes gobbledygook. Like, it's totally, you can't even understand what the intention it's really surprising. It's like, literally, no one checked this before it went out, so.
You know, that happens a lot on I don't think it's the case as much anymore, but Netflix kind of does it too. And I look at the subtitle and then it's not really up to the quality that I would expect them to have sometimes. So I know they use that program.
Right. So a lot of the time it's just automated for Netflix.
Yes.
Yeah. I've also seen what's for me is quite frustrating is that Netflix Korean content in Korea, obviously I'm accessing it in Korea, often doesn't have English subtitles available.
Oh, is this so?
Which is like, obviously, if you access any Korean content outside of Korea, of course, it automatically has English available, but it's often not here. But. Anyway, that's a small thing. Now you've been running, building your own brand. Do you ever think about going back to a company? Do you ever consider going back to a kind of regular, office work?
Oh, my. Gordon, I get this question pretty much every other week. I really do.
Oh, really?
And the people who I end up working with for different jobs, they always like, oh, do you want to take this full time? And, it's not something that I was just like, say no to right away, but I think about it but I don't think I can really do this full timer, doing one thing takes up 9 to 6 every day, because I still have so many interests and I don't know how to squeeze in all these different things if I were to have a daytime job. So for now, no, but I'm always thinking about it. So by the time that I get older, maybe the possibility will be a little stronger. And people hopefully still ask me the same question.
Yeah, I mean, it's also a bit of a grass is always greener on the other side type of scenario, right? People who are, in a company unhappy, wishing that they were doing their own thing. People who are doing their own thing and living with the uncertainty of where the next paycheck's coming from, wishing that they were in a company, and so it's difficult to find that balance.
Yeah, it's all about trade-offs.
Exactly. And those trade-offs change, of course, over time. Like you said, maybe in the future you might consider that. How much of the work that you do is from outside Korea? Like, are you doing a lot of kind of remote work as well?
I would say that changes as well constantly, but for now it's about like 20%. Yeah, but I try not
Okay,
to have
20%.
I'm not intending to increase that too much though.
Okay. I was asking my previous guest, who's a Korean German, and she's seen the uprising of the prevalence of Korean companies, Korean culture around the world, and how that's kind of benefited her. And so I was wondering whether you've also observed that, and whether that's also contributed to you and your work.
I think it's definitely affecting my work, especially like translation work that I do overseas that requires me to physically travel to another country and meet with people, local people there. Yeah, the more and more like people seem to really enjoy the fact that I'm Korean, like we're Korean. They're always curious about Korean culture, they're nicer. And then at the end of the day, it's about people to people. So if you like each other, the business deal is more likely to be closed. And that's been definitely helping with the business that my clients are doing as well, which I'm involved. Yeah. And
Okay.
also, I would
Okay.
say influencer work as well. I've been realizing there are more followers coming in from overseas as well, which is something that I didn't see happening much years ago. But now I get lots of followers from overseas, which means they're more interested in Korean, influencers. Like
Okay.
something that, yeah.
And I know that you also speak some Japanese, but these followers that you're gaining, is that also leading you to think about learning any new languages to add to your multilingual skills?
Yes, definitely. My main language is Korean and English, but then I do a little bit of Japanese, and then the fact that I've been traveling a lot there as well. Yeah, I'm getting more interested in learning it, but I have too much on my plate right now, so that's not my priority. But yes, someday. Yeah, I'm going to
Yeah.
Japan this Sunday, so
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
always traveling.
Will you still be able to catch the sakura? Is it still cherry blossom season there? Or is it gone already?
I think it's a goner. Yeah, it's too late.
Okay.
I hear that it's gonna be
The ana
raining.
Oh, really? The analogy that I always use for languages is it's like when you're filling up the bathtub and the plug has been taken out. So basically your language skill is like at a level, the level of the water in the bathtub. But if you don't add to it, because the plug is out, it's constantly draining down. It's constantly, depleting. And you've got to be constantly using it and refreshing it, right? You've got to be topping up the bathtub. And you've got to top it up at a greater rate than it's going out, right? So you can, if you're trying to learn a language and you're learning by just doing, like, say, one class a week, you're not getting anywhere. You're only filling up as much as it's draining out, right? So you can almost stay at
Absolutely.
the same level forever. What are some of the most important things that you've learned along the way for language acquisition? Because you've helped so many people with their language.
What is the most important thing in acquiring the language?
In terms of some of the best ways to learn effectively?
Oh, I think the first of all, you gotta be confident and bold. You gotta accept the fact that you are not a native speaker and nobody's gonna judge you based on your language skill because you're not supposed to be perfect or even good to begin with. So just lose the sense of embarrassment and just keep talking. Keep talking to a stranger. Use the words that you saw on Instagram or on YouTube. Just keep using it. Nobody's gonna shame you. And I think that's first. And the second, I would say listening skill is also important. Because you can only learn by listening to others and how they speak. So, like, find somebody that you really like the English of, and then try to mimic their speech, become best friends with them, and just, yeah, keep practicing with them. So the attitude also goes a long way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you've highlighted a key point, is that it's not just about language skill, it's about the skill of communication. And as you rightly said, listening is a big part of that. And I think, you know, I've met plenty of Koreans who are technically good at English, right? They know a lot of complicated vocabulary, they know all the sophisticated grammar, but how to actually put that into practice and actually relate to people from overseas, or initiate a conversation, or, you know, let alone networking, which is a very scary thing for a lot of people. That's another entirely different skill almost, right? So is that something that you're also trying to help people with? It's that, like, learning the language, but also learning the ways of communicating in English.
Absolutely. When I meet clients, first I try to decide what their purpose in English is. And then if they are undecided, I always try to go for business English, which means just because you're a beginner level English speaker doesn't mean you don't need business English, because business English is all about speaking sophisticated way, strategically, and then, you know, like, it's a manner of speaking that applies to any situation. So I try to teach that that comes with the business manner and how to deal with different people from different countries, how to be proactive, because Western culture obviously is based on being a little more proactive and being more outspoken, things like that. So I definitely teach the culture along the way as well. Yeah, how to communicate, not just the language itself.
Right, right. I mean, there's some clear examples of the culture difference when it comes to, you know, working environment and office culture. The couple of ones that come to my mind is the questions that don't exist in the Korean business environment. Let me say the traditional Korean business environment, not all business environments. The first one is, when is this due by? Right, you never ask your boss. You can never ask your boss when's it due by, because it should just be as quick as you possibly can. End of. Right,
humanly possible.
Right. Whereas, of course, in the West, right, it's important to know when it's due by, because it might be high priority and need to stay late today to get it done because it's such high priority, or it's actually not, and it's perfectly decent to get it next Tuesday, or even set the deadline for next Tuesday and deliver it by Monday. So, right. You know, and you kind of even exceed expectations. The other one, of course, is just why, right? a simple like why, like literally just zip asking it. Why is also, you know, it's a difficult one to confront, especially in, you know, the more traditional business environments. So the people that you are helping, do you find that they go through a kind of transition of how they approach their communication? Like, once they learn these differences, do they actually kind of internalize that new way of communicating?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the biggest changes that I'm really proud of myself and also proud of my students really come along with. You know, like, Koreans are so careful with themselves when they speak English. So even though they don't understand the conversation or whatever has been discussed in the meeting, they always just nod along and they try to figure out after. which oftentimes leading to huge backfire. So I taught them how to, you know, speak in a way so that they can get confirmation. Like, you know, like, oh, do you mean this? Like, I just want to make sure that I understand this correctly. Can you send me an email summarizing our conversation? Something like that. So like, after they started doing that, they definitely got much better in, you know, like not having too much of a miscommunication, and that clarity has gone up so much. And yeah, that's incredible. I mean, learning to speak up.
I have, for sure. I have so many personal examples of thinking that my Korean counterpart fully understands me, is on board. I'm getting all the signs that they are.
Nope.
And then later down the road, like the response, the answer or whatever, is entirely not what we asked for. It's entirely different. And I'm just like, where on earth did this come from? And then you kind of trace it back. So it's also something that I've learned from coming from an English native perspective is to make sure that the non-English native is on the same page and understands, right? Mm. So what the similar kind of techniques that you mentioned there, I also use to make sure that they know what I'm talking about and that they fully understand as well.
Yeah.
But the challenging one, I think, comprehension and understanding can be relatively easily fixed. The harder one is to induce questions if something comes up later, right? You know, the whole kind of, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to me.
Maybe you'll hesitate.
If I have, right.
They love hesitation. It's in our culture.
Right. Right. So that is one that is, I think, harder to change or to, like, that habit to do that. Do you feel that is something that's changing broadly within Korea? Do you think that that there is a change to not be so much hesitating like you mentioned?
I feel like yes. People are definitely being more honest about their feelings, and that they don't hold their tongues as much they used to. You know, like MZers, like they are so good at just speaking up their mind. If something goes wrong, it goes wrong, and that's it. And they're willing to take it. So I think it's definitely affecting how they speak English as well, which is a great change, and which I think is good. Yeah, because the language English itself is pretty direct. The way I see it is pretty direct. In the polite manner, you should be able to say anything. And it's all about how you word things. And young people seem to pick up on that pretty well these days. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point. You can be very... you can be very direct without necessarily being challenging.
Mm-mm.
It's like you say, it's how you form that question, how you approach. That is quite a nuance that's quite hard to understand and internalize. Do you also help? Do you also teach Korean as well?
I do. Yes. It's fun.
So have you? Yeah. And so my personal experience of learning Korean is that there's really still a lack of practical Korean in the order of which you need it. I found, and I've tried pretty much all the major syllabus out there, that for some reason, and I think it's because it's the Korean style of learning that is used to teach Korean, that you come up with some really sophisticated and unnecessary grammar very early on, before even like basic kind of practical situations are covered.
Yeah.
What sources do you use? Like, what kind of materials do you use to make sure that people can learn quickly and effectively?
I would say basic textbook that I always use, and then YouTube, of course, like social media. That's the easiest way to help them kind of like stay in the trend because language is always changing. It's not about like one thing that we use for the 100 years. Like things are always changing. So I try to kind of help them like learn idioms that are trending in this time and age to help them pick up a sense of the cultural trends as well. So yeah, social media is.
I think that's a good one because if people are really personally interested, then they're more likely to take an interest and learn more quickly. And I think some of the people that I've seen who've learned Korean the quickest are the diehard K-drama fans, the diehard K-pop fans, because they're so desperate to know everything that their idols and or their celebrity crushes are talking, singing, or being in their show. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so tell me about a time when you failed to get something done that you needed to, and how did you go about solving that?
That's an excellent question. It's kind of personal. I can be very lazy because I do have many interests. Doesn't mean that I always act on them and trying to keep things busy, achieving everything. I of course struggle, try to get anything done sometimes because I'm a big procrastinator. Usually happens when I try to be perfect at everything. Because that idea kind of eats me up, and then all of a sudden I cannot even do anything. I'm kind of like in this mode where I cannot do anything at all. So I try to make it a meaning. Like I try to decide that it's meaningful enough to just take a step forward, big or small, just start something. Then you're halfway there. Because oftentimes you don't even start and you just kind of build up the mindset that it's so scary to start. What if you don't finish? What if you don't become successful at that? Just start. So yeah, I try to get over the fear by just getting started. And that's how I was able to overcome this procrastination when that happens.
Just begin. Well, that under the mantra of the GSD project, that is, from as far as I'm concerned, the perfect answer, because I'm always a proponent of starting, right? Because, progress rather than perfection, right?
And absolutely.
Because the reality is it's always different. Like there's no such thing as a perfect plan, especially in a rapidly evolving, changing world that things are constantly happening and changing. There's so many factors because it's globalized. And so that means that there's things beyond our immediate visibility that still have an effect on what we do. I guess we're probably out of time now, Britti. So thank you so much for being my guest today and sharing your experiences. Thank you also for being very open about your journey.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I had such a good time talking to you and sharing whatever I have to offer to this community of getting things done. So hopefully some viewers can find that helpful. So thank you for having
Fantastic.
Me.
Fantastic. And what would be the best way for people to be able to find you online?
I do Instagram. So you can find me on Instagram. It's Ficklish, not feet, like the body part. Some people get confused. I don't know why. But it's FITGLISH, Ficklish. So find me there and then I'll keep posting interesting stuff.
Excellent. Excellent. And everybody who's joined us for this episode, thanks so much for being with us. And remember, let's get stuff done.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to the Get Stuff Done podcast. If you would like to be a guest in the future, please do reach out. Or if you would like to recommend someone, that would be awesome as well. Make sure you keep listening as we will be bringing you fresh insights every week because getting stuff done is something everyone needs.